You know, I was just talking on the podcast this weekend. We were talking about NXT moving to the CW. A lot of rumors going around about Monday Night Raw, where Raw is going to land. Could they go streaming? Right now, it looks like FX might be the favorite to land Monday Night Raw next year. But I said one of the things that I hope for the most is that if Raw moves to another network, anything other than USA, that Raw moves back to 2 hours. I would rather have Raw on a night other than Monday at 2 hours than have a 3-hour Raw on Monday. And tonight was a great example of that. This was a perfect example of why I feel that way. Tonight's episode was a story of the beginning, the end, and then everything else in the middle, like an Oreo cookie. Now, some people with an Oreo cookie, they like the creamy filling. Me personally, I like the cookie. I could just cut everything else out and just give me the two layers of the cookie, and I'm happy. If you gave me the two layers of the cookie tonight, I would have been perfectly happy. The rest of the show, not so much. Tonight's show was entirely carried by the War Games teams. It was carried by the Judgment Day. It was carried by the main event and the angle at the end of the show. The heel turn is complete. Drew McIntyre's heel turn. They finally pulled the trigger on it tonight, costing Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes the undisputed tag team titles. The Judgment Day retained their championships. And that right there now sets the stage for next week when we find out that Drew McIntyre is going to join the Judgment Day in War Games. The babyfaces must find a partner. And who will that partner be? Why, it will be the returning Randy Orton. That's how they'll go off the air next week. And we'll have the 5-on-5 War Games field set for Survivor Series. So that really is what tonight's show is all about. Because they have been teasing this Drew McIntyre, you know, this whole character arc now for months has been building to this moment. And tonight was the big turn. Now we wait and find out how Seth Rollins is going to react. Because earlier in the night on the show, Drew McIntyre was a total babyface with Seth Rollins. He walked up to the champion in the back and he shook his hand and he said, you know what, you beat me fair and square and I'm just going to have to work my way back up to get a rematch with you. Michael Cole on commentary in the main event said, look, McIntyre still has not let go of the anger that he has towards the bloodline for what they did to him when they screwed him out of the title last year. That's why he did what he did to Jey Uso and probably Cody Rhodes as well for bringing Jey Uso to Raw in the first place. How will Seth Rollins react to this? And I know there's a lot of interesting ways they can go with this now. As far as McIntyre's character, it's been the most compelling thing on Raw now for the past few months. Outside of that, JD McDonagh is also now officially a member of the Judgment Day. While Drew McIntyre, I don't believe, is officially a member of the stable itself, JD McDonagh is. JD is officially in JD. And beyond that, there really wasn't a whole lot else going on tonight. Tonight felt like a filler episode that if you missed it, if you did not see tonight's episode of Raw, you did not miss anything important. You could tune into the show next week and you will have not missed anything of any substance. We have Becky Lynch set up her match with Xia Li for TV next week. Why are they doing it on Raw and not Survivor Series? I'll tell you why. There's a very good reason why. We'll talk about that later as well. One thing that is very apparent watching these shows, Triple H is trying with a lot of different people on the show right now who are not over. DIY. I love DIY. They're not over. Right? It's a work in progress. He put them back together finally on the main roster, and he's trying to establish them. Now, they've lost 2 weeks in a row, so they're not doing too well right now. But it's going to take time to get them over. It's going to take time to get all the other people on the show that he is trying to push and trying to establish, namely a lot of these women who got no reaction on the show tonight. Indy Hartwell is out there wrestling. Nobody cares. Xia Li is out there wrestling. Nobody cares. Zoe Stark challenging Rhea Ripley at Survivor Series for the Women's World title. Nobody cares. That's on Triple H and WWE to get the people to care about them. I don't think there's enough time between now and Survivor Series to get them to invest that heavily in someone like a Zoe Stark, but I don't blame him for trying. And trying to set up new matches and fresh opponents for people like Rhea Ripley, and putting these women on television consistently is the only way you're ever going to try to get them over. Some will get over, some will not. But for months and months, you have women that have been sitting in the back, not even making appearances on television. This is what happens. When you finally put them on TV, nobody gives a shit. Now comes the hard part where you have to put the work in and the time and the consistency to get them on TV, get them reps, and hopefully the people will take to them. Even if they only connect with two of them, right? You can possibly establish two new stars in the women's division. But it was painfully obvious watching pretty much all the women's stuff tonight on the show, at least in Washington, D.C. tonight, that it's going to be an uphill climb. But you got to do it. You got to do it. You got to set up some new faces in the women's division, and this is how you do it. Unfortunately, it does make for a boring show when you have a lot of matches like that. So while this was not a bad show, I can't sit here and say that this was an awful show. It was definitely a very boring show for parts of it. And it made this show, unlike last week, feel every bit of the 3 hours that Raw is, which goes back to my original point, which is that Raw needs to be 2 hours again. I'm not naive enough to think it's actually going to happen, because if they can get money for the third hour, then it's going to be 3 hours long. But even at 2 hours, I don't think tonight would have been all that great of a show. I want to give a shout out to Sean in the chat, and Joey, I think it was Joey, who's celebrating a birthday tomorrow, and Sean on Thursday. So I want to say happy birthday to the both of you. Thank you for joining me here tonight. This is the Monday Night Raw Review. We are live. It is Monday, November 13, 2023. I am the Solemn Monster. Cody Rhodes opened the show tonight to ask us what it is that we wanted to talk about. He wanted to introduce us to his teammates in the War Games match. And so he introduced Jey Uso first, then Sami Zayn. Then out came Seth Rollins, who Kevin Nash on his podcast, I wanted to mention this. I'm sure you may or may not have seen this news. But Kevin Nash on his Click This podcast was talking about Seth Rollins. And he said he didn't really like this whole Seth freaking Rollins character, didn't really understand it, but it hit him recently. That Seth Rollins is the modern day Macho Man Randy Seth. Now, I heard this, and if you want to say that with the outfits that he wears and all of the bright colors that he wears when he comes out, that makes him a modern-day Macho Man, then sure. He might be the closest thing to a modern-day Macho Man just as far as his attire that we could think of, right, in WWE. But Seth Rollins and the Macho Man Randy Savage, two totally different people who cannot be compared. And the main reason that Seth Rollins is not a modern-day Macho Man Randy Savage is because when Seth Rollins is out there and he's waving his arms around and he's out there in his lingerie or whatever it is that he's wearing every week in his goofy glasses and doing his cackle, his Joker laugh, he's out there playing a part. It feels like he's out there and he's acting. Right? That's not who he is. He's out there playing a part. Randy Savage never felt like he was out there playing a part. That's who he was. He was a weird fucking guy. Even right down to the voice. Yeah. Like, that's how he really sounded. If you ever listen to Macho Man off camera doing interviews and stuff when he was on television shows, or he was a little more calm but he was talking to somebody, that's how he sounded. That was the Macho Man. He wasn't out there, oh, he's just playing a character. No, it felt like that's the real guy. That's Randy Savage. There's only one of a kind. So I don't agree that Seth Rollins is the modern day Macho Man, because there is only one Macho Man, Randy Savage. And when he came out, you believed that that's who he was. I cannot say the same for Seth Rollins when he comes out. He's out there doing his shtick, and that's fine, but that's what it comes off as. It comes off as shtick. I can't honestly say that anytime I watch Macho Man, I thought that it was just shtick. You know, like he had to think about how he was going to act or anything like that. I think when he rolled out of bed, that's just kind of how he was. He was a very high-strung individual. Anybody who's ever talked about him says he was a very high-strung individual, on and off camera. Cody said that they were all in the ring because of the Judgment Day and the coke. Yes, well, of course, Brumakia makes a great point, the cocaine, yes. So perhaps if Seth Rollins ever decides to sign with Billy Corgan in the NWA, maybe then we'll see shades of the Macho Man Randy Savage and Seth Rollins. I don't know what Seth Rollins on coke would look like or sound like. He may have to go talk to Billy about that. Poor Billy. I don't want to beat up on him anymore, but you want to know all about that, you can go to find those clips here on the channel. But Cody said, we're all here because of the Judgment Day. And he looked over at Sammy while he was saying that whether it's someone I've gotten along with or not for my entire career, and he looked at Zayn. He looked at Jey Uso and said whether it's someone he's only gotten along with recently. Or, and then Seth Rollins walked up to Cody and we had a stare down between the two. So before anything could happen, Damian Priest, Finn Balor, JD McDonagh, and Dominic Mysterio all walk out. Balor said the babyface team is a bunch of randos trying to compete against a family. Balor asked Rollins how it felt to be the world heavyweight champion when he was standing next to a man in Cody Rhodes that he could never beat, which is true. They had three pay-per-view matches on three straight shows. And three straight times, Cody Rhodes beat Seth Rollins, including with a torn pec. Seth Rollins never beat Cody Rhodes. Priest said Cody can beat his partners in any match that he wants, but the one thing he can't do is be a champion. Balor said that Sammy refers to himself as a world championship-level superstar, but after his performance last week, his partners know that he's nothing more than a loser. Priest asked Jay's partners whether they could trust him when he screwed them in the name of the bloodline. Dominic tried to talk. He got met with boos from the audience. Zayn told Dominic that nobody wanted to hear him speak. And he said that he and his teammates knew that the Judgment Day were trying to pit them against one another. He said that it's about power, and he and his teammates can put aside their issues. Sammy said there will be two rings, one cage, and it will be the most brutal match of their lives. So Cody said that he was surprised that the Judgment Day were able to walk to the ring without Rhea Ripley, because she wasn't out there with them. And Cody asked if she was the leader. And Damian Priest got angry and said, Rhea isn't the leader. And so Cody decided to go down the line, and he asked if Balor was the leader. He said, well, maybe Dominic is the leader. And Priest said, Dominic's not the leader. He said, well, maybe JD McDonagh is the leader. And finally, Priest just snapped and he blurted out, I'm the leader, which got a look, some side eye there from Finn Balor. Rollins said that he was sick of all the talking, and he said that he and Sammy were ready to fight. He challenged Dominic and McDonagh to face them, and Priest said, we accept, which drew looks from all the members of the Judgment Day that he would be speaking on their behalf and accepting this match on their behalf. And taking it upon himself to make that kind of decision. So it started out with the Judgment Day trying to drive a wedge between the babyfaces, right? Between Cody and his teammates. And it backfired. And what ended up happening was Cody outsmarted them. A rare case where, you know, we talk about dumb babyface syndrome. And I coined that term years ago, and it's as relevant today as it was then. This was a rare instance where the babyfaces, I feel like, outsmarted the heels. And by the end of this segment, it was Cody who got under Damian Priest's skin and got him to, you know, it's almost like he was drunk, right? They say a drunk man's words or a sober man's thoughts. And later on, he would say, no, I just got angry. I didn't really mean what I said, but you know he meant what he said. All right, he got him to expose the truth that Damian Priest views himself as the leader of the Judgment Day. And he may be the longest tenured member of the Judgment Day, right? He was the first person that Edge recruited when the Judgment Day was formed. But if you watch the television show, every single important decision that is made by the Judgment Day is made by Rhea Ripley, or Rhea Ripley is in the middle of it. Rhea Ripley is making decisions that Finn Balor and Damian Priest and Dominic just go along with. Now, I don't know about you, but that's the definition of a leader for anybody who still doesn't believe that Rhea Ripley is the leader of the Judgment Day. It's been pretty apparent from day fucking one, once they kicked Edge out of the group, who the real leader of the Judgment Day was. So when they came back from break, Adam Pearce had already made it official, and they joined the match in progress. It was Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn against Dominic Mysterio and JD McDonagh. YouTube says the stream started 6 hours ago. Well, that's news to me if it started 6 hours ago, boy. I'll tell you what, if the stream started 6 hours ago, then we should be doing a hell of a lot better than 275 likes. I'll tell you that. So get those likes up. Jeez, I didn't realize. I've been sitting here for 6 hours streaming. I must have hit the button by accident. Now, I don't know, YouTube. Look, this is the same platform. Was it last week or the week before? I put the streaming page up. It was like 3 hours before I even went live. And I think it was Firepanda in the chat pointed out that it said the video had 138,000 likes. Now, I get some really nice support here on the channel. But if I ever show up here 4 hours before the show goes on the air and I have 138,000 likes, I will do... You remember the old television show Perfect Strangers? I will strip down and do the dance of joy on camera if I look over one day and see that we have 138,000 likes. So YouTube has been glitching out lately. I don't know what the fuck is going on with YouTube, but it's been very wonky lately. I don't know what's going on. So you better hope we don't get 138,000 likes, because ain't nobody going to want to see that. I'll tell you that right now. Anyway, Dominic did the Three Amigos, Perfect Strangers, such a great show. What a great show. Dominic did the Three Amigos. Michael Cole referenced Eddie Guerrero. For those who do not know, today is the 18-year anniversary of the passing of Eddie Guerrero. It's almost 20 years that Eddie Guerrero's been dead. Sammy and Seth hit stereo dives ahead of a commercial break. But Michael Cole let us know that the Judgment Day took over during the break. Rollins made a hot tag. He was all over Dominic. Dominic fought back, went to hit the ropes for a 619, but Rollins cut him off with a super kick, followed that off with a buckle bomb. Rollins was crouched in the corner. He was setting up for the stomp. When Finn Balor and Damian Priest came out of the crowd, they attacked. Rhea Ripley was out there with them directing traffic. This was a disqualification, so Rollins and Zayn win by DQ. Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso ran out to make the save. It was pandemonium. Giant brawl breaks out. Here comes Adam Pearce. He's got security, a dozen security. He's got agents coming out. I saw Jason Jordan was out there. They're trying to calm things down. In the ring, Jey went to go give Damian Priest a spear. JD McDonagh shoved Priest out of the way, and he took the bullet. He ate the spear instead. Adam Pearce grabbed the microphone, and Adam Pearce was pissed. He was pissed. Another match ruined. And he announced that everybody not involved in War Games. He didn't say all members of the Judgment Day. He said anyone not involved in War Games. Not only are they barred from ringside for the main event later in the show for the tag team titles, but they're barred from the building. They're going to have to leave. And Rhea Ripley started to just lose her shit. She started arguing with him. That took us directly into a commercial break. And again, the key words there were everyone not involved in War Games. That right there was the tip-off that one of two things or both were going to happen at the end of the show. And I even wrote the two names here in my notes. Rhea Ripley, number one, right? Because Rhea Ripley's not involved in War Games. So I was expecting her to be out there in the main event, and she wasn't. But Drew McIntyre. This just felt like this was going to be the time for Drew McIntyre to make his presence felt and cost Cody and Jey the tag team titles, which is exactly what happened. But that was the key. Anyone not involved in War Games cannot be at ringside. Well, so far, That might change next week, but so far, Drew McIntyre, he's not involved in War Games. When they came back from the break, Rhea was still in the ring with Pierce, and she was screaming and she was ranting and raving. Pierce channeled his inner Clark Gable and told Rhea, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Someone's been watching some timeless Tony Storm lately." It was old movie references here. And he reminded her that he runs Raw. You know, ever since Triple H officially made him the general manager of Raw, Adam Pearce has grown a set of balls on him. He's grown a spine. He's standing up for himself. I'm proud of this guy. He's not taking shit from anybody. Where was this Adam Pearce for the last 3.5 years? It's like he was digging in a bag in the back. He goes, "Holy shit, my balls. They were there the whole time. Yeah, let me put them on here." So he's laying down the law here to Rhea Ripley. Zoe Stark interrupts, comes to the ring, and Pierce says, "Look, we've had enough drama." And Rhea says, no, actually, I want to hear. Let her. I want to hear what she has to say." And Stark said that Rhea wasn't as dumb as she looked, and said that she must know why she's out here. And she said that Ripley had too much on her plate. War Games coming up, tag team titles, her title, Dominic. And she warned Rhea about overlooking her. And Ripley said, "Look, I'm not overlooking you." She says that she's been following Zoe since NXT, and she knew that they would end up in the ring together. She said Zoe sent Trish Stratus packing. She's the woman who beat Becky Lynch. She said Zoe reminded her of herself. But the only way that she would win a title is if it was on another brand. So what I like about this is she didn't tear down Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark needs all the help that she can get. Because even though she's been on television now for many months, she's still not over, right? The crowd is not invested in her. And they don't buy her as a serious threat to Rhea Ripley. Because Rhea's just been so dominant this entire run. So Rhea could have easily gone out there and said, "Who the hell are you? You're nobody. Who'd you ever be?" Right? All of these things would be counterproductive because all you're doing is reinforcing what the people already think. Instead, Rhea was out there saying, no, I know exactly who you are. I've been watching you and following you since your career in NXT. I'm impressed. Right? Trish picked you. You beat Becky. You did this. You did that. You won the Battle Royal. So she put her over, which is important because, again, she needs all the help that she can get as a credible challenger. So I like that aspect of it. But the crowd for this segment was quiet until they started chanting and cheering for Rhea Ripley, and Ripley made a comment about how mommy is always on top, which, of course, that got the crowd into things. She said she wasn't spreading herself too thin. She could handle all of it because she was Rhea Bloody Ripley. Then she told Zoe to get out of her ring so she can get back to handling Judgment Day business. Ripley dropped the microphone, started yelling again at Adam Pearce. Zoe said that she almost beat Ripley at Crown Jewel, and she will become the women's champion at Survivor Series. And Rhea went to go attack her, and Zoe low-bridged her, and Rhea went flying out over the top rope to the floor. Zoe went up top. She was going to try for a dive, but Rhea backed away. And so Zoe just dropped back down to her feet in the ring, and that was how they closed things out. So again, the crowd not buying Zoe Stark yet. I mean, they only have one more week. There aren't very many Raws left. There's only one left. And I don't know what they're going to do with them next week. Is it going to be a contract signing? Are we going to have a summit, you know, in the ring with the two of them? I don't know what they're going to do next week with Rhea and Zoe. But again, you know, this is on Triple H. He wanted to back Zoe Stark as a challenger for Survivor Series for Rhea Ripley, and that's perfectly fine. Zoe is a very good worker, right? Very capable. I think her and Rhea are going to go in there at Survivor Series and have a very good match. The opposite of what we saw, was it last year, I think it was, with Ronda Rousey and Shotzi, who had a terrible match. That was another situation where they put somebody in there against, you know, the dominant champion, who you normally didn't see in a title situation like that, and it didn't work. They just did not have a good match. I think Zoe and Rhea will have a very good match. And I think it'll probably more so end up being because the crowd in Chicago is just going to probably get behind Rhea Ripley. But this is the sort of thing they have to start doing. They have to start building up some of the women. Zoe's been around for a little bit, right? She had the storyline with Trish Stratus. I look back on that and, you know, it's a smart way to try to get somebody over. By giving them the rub from somebody who's a bigger star than they are. So I know exactly why they did what they did. I would argue that coming out of it, I don't think Zoe Stark was any more over than she was going into the whole program, partnering with Trish. But it was something that they tried, and they're going to have to try harder. They have a lot of women on this roster who the crowd is just not connecting. You know, they're just not reacting in the way that you would want them to. But Rome was not built in a day, as we are finding out. Shinsuke Nakamura delivered another promo backstage with subtitles and dramatic music, and he said that he was frustrated, and whoever it was that he was addressing, because he's talking about a certain individual. We don't know who this individual is that he's talking about, but whoever this person is, he said, they are blessed with so much privilege. He said he was taking the opportunity away, and it's now his. He said that win or lose your next battle, the person will be less than. And Nakamura said that that's not his problem, and he will wait for now because he knows it all ends at his hands. There you go. Let the speculation begin. Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins were talking in the back when they were approached by Cody Rhodes. And Cody asked Sami if he would give him a minute. Sammy looked at both of them and said, you guys cool? All right, cool. He walked off. And Cody told Seth, look, we don't have to like each other. You can hate me the other 364 days out of the year, but I need you. He goes, I need you at Survivor Series. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. We have our common enemy here in the Judgment Day, and I need your help. And Rollins said, look, he doesn't like Cody. He probably never would, but he does respect him. He promised Cody that they would be all good at Survivor Series. And he patted him on the back, and he told Cody to go out there and win the tag team title. So all appears to be well for the time being with Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes, who, as far as I know, the two of them, they're really, like, legitimately behind the scenes. They're not friends. They're not good friends. It sounds to me like a professional jealousy type of situation where Cody came back to the company after so many years away and working for the other guys, and his first match back was at WrestleMania against Seth, who I'm sure in his mind, I'm working all year. They have nothing for me at WrestleMania. They come up with this, and it's for me to lose to the AEW VP, the EVP of AEW, and then lose to him again and lose to him a third time. So I'm sure that has a little something to do with how Seth Rollins feels about Cody Rhodes, but they're professional and they're able to work together. But I don't get the impression that they are on each other's Christmas card list. We had Otis one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura. When I did my NXT review on episode 834 of the podcast yesterday, I talked about a match, a fun match on NXT last Tuesday that Otis had because Alpha Academy was there. And Otis had a match with Drew Gulak. And the crowd at the Performance Center was really into it. They were really into Otis. And it turned out to be a fun match. This was more of the same. Crowd here loved Otis. Got really into the comebacks late in the match. Chad Gable, you know, I talk about him eventually winning the Intercontinental title. And I still feel that way. That he'll eventually win the IC title. I want to see him get more of a serious singles push. We shouldn't ignore Otis. Because Otis goes out there and, you know, again, he's a mid-card guy. He's not pushed at like a top main event level or anything like that. But the people really genuinely like him. You know, they like this guy. And he's been getting really good reactions of late during his matches. And he gets all fired up and the people are into it. So I would say as much as I want to see Chad Gable get a singles run, that would also open up Otis to get a bit of a singles run himself. I think at some point down the road, I'd like to see that. I think the fans would too. Nakamura set up for the Kinshasa. Otis avoided it and hit a power slam for a near fall. Otis went for a splash from the middle rope. Nakamura, though, put his feet up, and then he hit Otis with a flying knee from the ropes. That did not knock the big man down. All it did was it fired him up even more. Nakamura kicked Otis's legs out from under him and then hit him with a Kinshasa to the back of the head. And then he followed that one up because Otis was still not out. He followed it up with one more Kinshasa, and that finally put him down. After the match was over, the other members of the Alpha Academy got in the ring to go check on Otis, and Nakamura walks over, and he pie-faces Chad Gable, but from the back of the head. Well, I guess that would be what, pie head? But he shoves his head, and Gable turns around and sees this, and he goes to charge at him, but the other members of the Alpha Academy restrain him. So they protected Otis also. You know, I talk about Otis being over. They protected him, too, in this match, because it took three Kinshasas to put this guy down. Normally, you know, he hits one, and that's it. He hit three of them. It took three to put Otis down. So even in defeat, Triple H taking steps to try to protect this guy. And now they're teasing a match between Nakamura and Chad Gable. I didn't see at the end if they are doing the match next week, if they officially announced it for next week. I don't know that they're going to save that for Survivor Series. My guess is it ends up on TV. But I'm all for that. You know, Nakamura and Gable sounds like a very good match. I don't know who this mystery man is that they have been teasing for weeks now. Ever since his program with Seth Rollins ended, they've been teasing that Nakamura has his eye on somebody. I don't know who the person is. You know, if he wasn't going to be in War Games, as I expect him to, I would say that it's building to the return of Randy Orton. That this is what Randy Orton's return is going to be. He would show up, and he would beat Nakamura in his first match back. It could still be. It could still very well be Randy Orton, even if he's in War Games, right? Because it doesn't mean that they're going to set up a match with Nakamura and a mystery man at Survivor Series. I actually think that's a very dangerous thing to do. Because if you set up a mystery man situation for War Games, if you set up a mystery man situation for Nakamura, you're in Chicago. So what do you think people are going to be expecting? Right? CM Punk. And you're going to be getting CM Punk chants. Now, you may get those chants anyway, but if you're going to have a mystery man situation in an open slot going into the pay-per-view, then you better damn well deliver CM Punk, because that's all people are going to be thinking about. So I don't necessarily expect that they're going to go into the show with him against, you know, some sort of mystery man. It could very well be a situation where, you know, he attacks a Randy Orton or something coming out of War Games, right? We don't know when we're going to get the reveal of who the person is. But again, you're playing a very dangerous game. If you go into Survivor Series and you do that and you don't have CM Punk as a surprise, and I don't think he's going to be on the show. So it's a very dangerous game to be playing if that's what they're going to do. Now, Seth Rollins was backstage. He was walking and he was approached by Drew McIntyre. Now, on the show last week, McIntyre made one very brief appearance. They showed him in his SUV pulling up to the building outside, and he stepped out, and I guess it would have been Jackie Redmond went over to interview him, and all he did was just stare ahead at the arena, got back in his car, and drove off, and we didn't see him again. I thought he was going to get involved in the main event last week, and he didn't. I was only off by 1 week. He got involved in the main event, but it wasn't last week. It was tonight. So now McIntyre is back. He's in his street clothes. He's standing there. And he remembers Rollins telling him that he would have nobody to blame but himself if he lost at Crown Jewel. McIntyre said Rollins was right. And he also remembered Rollins saying that the loss might just be the best thing that ever happens to him. And McIntyre said that Rollins may have been right about that too. He said there's something he's been waiting to give Seth. And he took his hand and he put it out for a handshake. Rollins, of course, was a little standoffish at first, but he ended up accepting the gesture and he shook his hand. McIntyre said that Rollins represents the title in the way that a champion should. And he congratulated him and he said that he would do what he always does by working his ass off and earning a rematch. And Rollins kind of patted him on the chest and said, I know you well. And he walked away. And McIntyre had a big smile on his face, too. So I knew then, this fucking guy's coming out in the main event, and he's going to screw the baby faces over, right? You had to see it coming. As predictable as it was, I still love the way that they have been playing out all the segments with Drew McIntyre, right? Predictable as it may be, I think that they have done a pitch-perfect job with his character throughout this entire story. So we had Tegan Knox with Natalya in her corner one-on-one with Piper Niven, who had Chelsea Green in her corner. They aired a video package before the match on Tegan Knox where she said that she's been defined by injury for a very long time, and they had footage from when she blew out, at least one of the times, when she blew out her ACL. For those who don't know, Tegan Knox has blown her ACL out three different times. I believe the first time was when she was playing soccer? I want to say soccer or football. Whatever sport it was that she was playing before she started wrestling. I think that was her first torn ACL. Since becoming a wrestler, she's tore it two more times. So they had footage from at least one of those times here during the video. And she said, nobody wants to be known for crying on camera. Tell that to Ric Flair. She said the last year of her career has been the craziest of her life. Really? It's pretty sad. What has Tegan Knox done over the past year? I was racking my brain trying to figure out, like, this must be a real wild year that Tegan Knox has had. What, going from SmackDown to Raw? What's the wildest thing that happened over the past year to Tegan Knox? I still would love to know. But she says it's been the wildest year of her career. She says she's faced some of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and she can hang with the best of them. Now, she got the video package. Piper Niven did not. So that should have been a dead giveaway about who was going to win this next match. Natty, bless Natty. You know, she tried her hardest. She was trying to get the crowd to rally behind Tegan Knox, and they just did not care. They have the right idea, though. Here's another example of it where they're trying to use an established talent like they did with Trish and Zoe. They have Natty, who a few months ago just sort of randomly befriended Tegan Knox, and they have Natty out there tonight trying to get the crowd behind her. The problem is, Natty has been around for so long, and she has been established that she is not going to be a champion, right? She's been around forever. She's been a women's champion before multiple times. But Natty is not that person anymore. She's a legend in the women's division. She'll be in the Hall of Fame one day, right? Everybody knows that. She's in the Guinness Book of World Records. But just because Natty endorses someone, she doesn't have that sort of cachet where the fans are suddenly going to be like, oh, well, Natty likes her, so we better get behind her, right? It's different if you had a Becky Lynch come out, let's say, or someone like that to endorse somebody, which is kind of what Becky did with Lyra Valkyrie in NXT, you know, by putting her over in the way that she did. Natty doing it, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. She could be best friends with Tegan Knox, right? They could have slumber parties and play Spin the Bottle. Nobody gives a fuck. So they have the right idea. They probably just have the wrong person doing it. Tegan started to, Seth has been a channel member for 9 months. Shout out, by the way, to Silver Tower. I did notice that Silver Tower gifted 10 channel memberships. So we have 10 new members of the family here, thanks to Silver Tower. Shout out to him. Tegan started to get some offense until Chelsea jumped on the apron right in front of the referee. That distraction allowed Piper to knock down Tegan. Natty then decked Chelsea because Chelsea tried to get involved. So Piper decked Natty and knocked her off the apron to the floor. That allowed Tegan to hit Piper with the shiniest wizard, but Niven got her leg on the bottom rope. Piper tried for a seated senton. Knox moved and applied a crucifix pin and got the win. And so now I have to assume that this is going to set up Natty and Tegan for a shot at the women's tag team titles because they just beat one half of the champions. So we're probably going to get that tag team title match sometime soon. The Miz was interviewed by Jackie Redmond backstage. She asked what was driving Miz to take a stab at dethroning Gunther for the Intercontinental title. And Miz said, a bus. He said it took him a long time, but he finally got his own bus. He then assumed, oh, you meant the match at Survivor Series. That's what you meant. And he said, it's all about respect. Miz said that Gunther has been trying to diminish him by calling him a sports entertainer and a clown. Well, if the clown shoes fit. Ivar and Valhalla showed up. Ivar said Miz is a clown. Bronson Reed showed up. And he said the only person luckier than Miz was Gunther for escaping him. Ivar said that Reed had his chance against Gunther and he failed. And Reed threatened to send Ivar back to his Viking gods. Miz, at this point, exited the picture. Ivar pie-faced Reed. And when Reed turned back around, Valhalla was standing in front of him. Of course, Bronson Reed can't do anything now, because what's he going to do, right? He's going to punch her in the face? So he just stood there all angry and pissed off, looking at Valhalla. We had Tommaso Ciampa. One-on-one. You know, I would like to think that if Jackie Robinson came back from the dead, yes, that he could do better than being a backstage interviewer for WWE. I mean, what's the point of even coming back to life if that's what you're going to come back and do? Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's that time of year where we start to hear Mariah Carey on the radio telling us that all she wants for Christmas is you, even though she doesn't really mean that. I mean, she says it every year, but she never responds to any of my messages. But while the holidays may be a joyous time for some, it can be a time of loneliness and depression for others. I get a little sad myself around the holidays when I think of all my family members that are no longer with us. If you're dealing with the stress or sadness of the holiday season, therapy can be a bright spot for you. Something to look forward to make you feel grounded and to give you the tools to manage whatever it is that might be bothering you. Now, you've heard me talk about BetterHelp many times before, and there's a reason for it. Therapy has a host of positive benefits. It can teach you positive coping skills and how to set boundaries, but it isn't just for people who have had major trauma in their lives. I think people sometimes think, oh, therapy, you know, this person had something traumatic that happened to them. Yes, it's true, and therapy can be very helpful for people like that, but it's not only for people like that. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to fit into your schedule, however busy you may be. All you do to get started is fill out a questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your bright spot this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Tommaso Ciampa one-on-one against Ludwig Kaiser. Michael Cole and Wade Barrett, they got into a discussion here during this match about the Louvre after Wade Barrett called Kaiser a work of art. And Michael Cole very proudly told him that the Louvre wasn't all that impressive. I myself have not been there before, so I can't say. But I don't know that I would necessarily take Michael Cole's word for that. Giovanni Vinci tripped up Tommaso Ciampa as he was coming off the ropes. And the referee, he wasn't sure exactly what he did. Johnny Gargano was out there. He let him know what happened. And so the referee ejects Vinci from ringside. Okay, now this is key. I want you to follow along with me here. He ejected Giovanni Vinci from ringside. Ciampa looked like he was setting up for the finish here, for the fairy tale ending, when Vinci suddenly reappeared after being ejected. He reappeared at ringside through the crowd, and he booted Gargano. Ciampa was distracted by this, so Kaiser rolled him. We got a Kaiser roll. Been a while since we got one of those. We got a Kaiser roll. He rolls him up, and he holds the tights, and he gets the pin. Now, the referee clearly saw Giovanni Vinci The same man that he ejected from ringside clearly saw him return to the ring, did nothing, and counted the fall anyway for Imperium. Now, this was the same referee who officiated the Fatal 4-Way last week and counted what was supposed to be a double pin. Ricochet was concussed. He got a shoulder up when he wasn't supposed to. The referee was looking right at it when he counted the three. And so it's like, ah, all right, well, Miz wins. But the referee was still trying to play it up like, well, we were going to have a double pin, so I got to play it up like a double pin, which made him look like a fucking idiot because everyone and their mother could see that the Miz won fair and square, and the referee looked like he was about to tell Miz, no, no. So we're not at Rick Knox levels yet. Okay, we're not in Rick Knox territory, the worst referee in the history of mankind. Well, in wrestling, of course, you have Angel Hernandez in Major League Baseball is the worst official I've ever seen in my fucking life. But we're not at that level yet. A few more weeks of this, though, and we may yet get there. This was a very stupid finish. Now, we found out later in the show why they did the finish the way they did. It played into a backstage segment we got later with Imperium. But of all the ways that they could have done this, the way this came off, this was probably the worst. This just looks stupid. And DIY loses again. Last week it was to the Creeds, and this week Ciampa loses to Kaiser. So it has not been a good 2 weeks for DIY. Judgment Day had a meeting backstage. Ripley and Dominic, they made a remark about Damian Priest calling himself their leader. And Priest tried to downplay it, and he said, look, I just got hot. Didn't really mean it. Ripley did think, though, that Priest should be the one in charge at War Games. And she said, if Dom and Balor and JD, if everyone's cool with it, and they were cool with it. So Damian Priest is going to be the team captain in War Games. Balor asked Rhea about that other thing that we have to take care of. And Rhea grabbed the duffel bag and said that it was time to make JD McDonagh an official member of the Judgment Day. Right, this entire time now, it's been a few months. He's been hanging around them. It's like he's been auditioning for the part. Now it was time to make it official. And Priest said he wasn't ready for this. Ripley, though, said that, look, he's in medical right now. Okay, you know why he's in medical? Because he took the bullet for you earlier on that spear. And when she put it like that, Priest grabbed the duffel bag and said, no, I'll do it myself. And he walked off to go find medical, as they kept saying, the trainer's room. We had Xia Li one-on-one against Indy Hartwell. Like the match earlier with Tegan Nox and Piper Niven, the crowd just didn't care. And Indy's offense looked very rough here in this match. They went to ringside. Xia Li shoved Indy into the ring post. Back inside, Hartwell made a very brief comeback with a pair of very weak-looking clotheslines and a spine buster for a near fall. Xia caught Indy with a shot to the throat and then hit her with her deadly spinning heel kick. Didn't hit her flush. Indy sort of turned away from it, but she got enough of it that she sold it like she was knocked loopy. As Xia came in for another kick, Hartwell collapsed, and the referee had to back Xia up so that he could check on her. And then he called the match off 2 minutes in. So the winner via ref stoppage is Xia Li. After the match, Becky Lynch came out. Becky Lynch, of course, was knocked out of the Women's Battle Royal last week before she could even get into the ring. Xia came out and kicked her, which wasn't very smart because Xia then got kicked out of the Battle Royal by Adam Pearce. So if she had just waited 2 minutes, she could have snuck up behind Becky in the Battle Royal and did the exact same thing and then dumped her out over the top rope. Stupid. Stupid. So Becky comes out, and she said that after Xia kicked her in the head last week, now we're going to do things on my time. We're not going to do things on your time. And she said that she was looking for a fight. She got into the ring. She set up for a manhandle slam. Xia slipped away and exited the ring. And Becky got back on the mic, said that Xia had 7 more days because next week they would meet on Monday Night Raw. This is what they've been building the knockout kick for. It's only been a few weeks, but they have been building that kick up as this kind of death blow, all in preparation for this match between Xia and Becky next week. But she's not beating Becky Lynch. And the reason they're doing this match on Raw and they're not doing it at Survivor Series is because the rumor is, spoiler, for those who don't want a spoiler, you can cover your ears. But the belief is that the fourth member of the women's team in the what will probably end up being the women's War Games match at Survivor Series with Charlotte, Bianca, and Shotzi is not going to be Jade Cargill like I thought maybe it would be. It's going to be Becky Lynch, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Maybe they can make it make sense next week, but right now it makes no sense because that's all SmackDown women. Becky Lynch is on Raw. Becky Lynch is not on SmackDown. Becky Lynch has no beef with Damage Control. But it sounds like they want more star power in the match. They don't really have a lot of other great options unless they put Jade in there. I'm not even sure Jade is ready for that. Jade's first match is going to be War Games. You know, you don't do Jade, then you're left with Mia Yim, Zelina Vega, and B-Fab, right? I mean, come on. So, yeah, I could understand why they would want to put Becky Lynch in there. But if Becky Lynch is doing War Games at Survivor Series, they got to get this match with Xia Li done now. They showed The Miz. In the back, he was warming up in preparation for his match with Ivar when Gunther walked up and congratulated him. This is my new favorite thing on this show. So, I don't think it actually aired on TV last week, but I played audio of it on the podcast. Gunther, at the show last week, after Miz won the four-way, was interviewed in the back. And he was like, you talk about backhanded compliment. He was talking about how impressed he was at the Miz's performance. In winning the four-way, he goes, he really sports entertained me tonight. He even wrestled a little bit. This man can do things I wasn't aware that he could do. So here, Gunther walks up to him and he congratulates The Miz. And he says, to the surprise of absolutely everybody, you won last week. And he said, the fun and games are over now. Miz interrupted him. He was very animated. And he told him, watch my match tonight. He said, Gunther doesn't understand who he's dealing with. He said he does whatever it takes to win. And there is a reason why he has been the Intercontinental Champion 8 different times before. Gunther said he knows exactly who he's dealing with. He said whatever happened during Miz's match with Ivar would be nothing compared to the beating of a lifetime that he is going to give him at Survivor Series. Amen to that. Zoe Stark was shown speaking with Shayna Baszler backstage. And Shayna thought that she could just as easily have been the women's champion right now, or at least be in the position that Zoe is in. But she also admitted that Zoe was on a roll, and she looked forward to seeing her beat Rhea Ripley at Survivor Series. Raquel Rodriguez walked in. She wasn't thrilled that they eliminated her in the Battle Royal last week, but she wishes Zoe good luck against Rhea Ripley. Nia Jax lumbered in and mocked them for handing out well wishes, and Jax said that they teamed up to eliminate her, but yet none of them could beat her one-on-one. And Raquel got up in her face and asked her why she wasn't the champion right now. You're so tough, right? Where's the title? And so Rodriguez said that she knew she could beat her if given the opportunity, and Nia just sort of blew her off and walked away. So it is official. The two of them are having a singles match on Raw next Monday night, and I only hope this. If you watch the five-way at Crown Jewel, there was a spot in the match where Raquel tried to get Nia up. I mean, she got her up as Nia was using the ropes to balance herself. She got her up for her Tejana bomb. And as soon as Nia let go of the top rope, Raquel couldn't hold her up there, so she just sort of fell. So if they're going to try that again next week, I only hope this time that Raquel can actually pick her up and hold her up for a few seconds before she drops her. Because Raquel's whole thing is that she's this powerhouse, right? Her power is very impressive. So that's the most important spot of the entire match. She has to be able to get her up and hold her there. Otherwise, you don't get that moment. So I hope it goes better for her next week than it did in Saudi Arabia. We had The Miz one-on-one with Ivar. Jade should be in the Royal Rumble to make it not obvious. I mean, look, that's what I said when Jade first signed. I still think she needs time in NXT. But I said if they want to have her in the Royal Rumble as a surprise entrant, I think that would be fine. I think that would actually be the best place, frankly, for her to debut is in the Royal Rumble. Only thing is, if she doesn't win, who eliminates her? Right? Is that going to be her first feud? We had The Miz one-on-one with Ivar. I'm looking at the chat. It looks like we hit our goal. I was looking at somebody in the chat. The goal was 400 likes for Be the Booker, and we are at 410. So not a lot of super chats, but we hit our likes goal. So there you go. I guess the good with the bad, I guess. Miz against Ivar. Miz was showing off early on. It was a little bit of flashy offense. Ivar cut him off with a spinning power slam. Ivar became distracted as Bronson Reed walked out, so Miz hit him with a bulldog off the ropes, which Michael Cole called a tornado DDT. Close enough. Miz charged at Ivar. Ivar, though, sat down on him as he came running into the corner. Reed grabbed a chair from the timekeeper's area and then took a seat at ringside. He was going to watch the match, take a load off. After a commercial, Ivar hit a backbreaker and a sit-out powerbomb for two. Miz hit a DDT for a near fall and followed with the yes kicks. And the crowd was chanting yes right along with him. Ivar distracted the referee as Valhalla gave Miz a cheap shot. And Ivar connected with a roundhouse kick for two. They ended up on the ropes. Miz looked like he was setting up for a skull-crushing finale off the ropes. Ivar countered into a world's strongest slam from the middle rope, and that only got him a near fall. Ivar went up top. He was setting up for the moonsault, and again, he became distracted by Bronson Reed, who wasn't doing anything. He really didn't do anything. And Ivar becomes distracted by this man. Way too many instances on these shows of people being easily distracted. They are leaning on this as a crutch. I mean, they've been doing this for a while, but they've been leaning on this as a crutch. It feels like far more lately than usual. These are not cats with a fucking laser pointer. They should not be so easily distracted. Miz slipped underneath. He stacked Ivar up the same way he did to Bronson Reed last week when Reed missed the tsunami splash and he just sort of fell forward and pinned his shoulders down to the mat. So he stacked Ivar up, and this time he placed his feet on the ropes, which the referee did not see, and Miz got the pin. And he did tell Gunther backstage, "I'll do whatever it takes to win." So he proved him right here. But I will say this. The psychology here, going into this match at Survivor Series with Gunther and The Miz, is completely ass backwards. Because on the one hand, you have the heel in Gunther who never cheats to win. It's one of the things I like about Gunther. He's not the typical chicken shit WWE heel, right? Rarely, if ever, does he cheat. Maybe there was one time that I'm neglecting to remember, but generally, he goes in there and he wins his matches clean. Right? The heel who doesn't cheat is wrestling the new babyface who is all but promising to cheat and do whatever it takes to win. The logic here is completely backwards. But after the match was over, Reed ran over Ivar and then he hit him with a tsunami splash. I do like that Triple H is at least making an effort to make sure that everybody is involved in something on the show or has a story of some kind. You know, in this case, it's Bronson Reed and Ivar. Obviously, this is leading to a match between the two. Heel against heel, but I do like that he's at least making an attempt to get somebody involved in something up and down the show. When you had so many of these people, my God, Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae and Xia Li. Where was Xia Li for the better part of a year, year and a half, right? Where was she? She was there, but she wasn't being used. She was on Main Event. She wasn't on Raw. She wasn't on SmackDown. So you can see, though, watching these shows week after week, he's taking these people who have been basically on the shelf collecting dust. He's taking his feather duster and dusting them off and taking them off the shelf and playing with his toys and trying to do something with these people. So I like that. I applaud him for that. Don't know if it's going to work with all these people, but I applaud him for that. Now, Damian Priest approached J.D. McDonagh backstage. McDonagh, I guess, left medical, and he was walking through the hallway. So Priest walked up to him, and he admitted, look, I still get annoyed by you, but I also know that you took one for the team. And he said McDonagh is somebody that he could stand with. And he officially welcomed him to the Judgment Day, and he reached into the duffel bag, and he pulled out J.D.'s new jacket. Reminded me of the Aces and Eights days in TNA. Remember, every new member would get their leather vest. They would get their cut. Remember that? Every member of the Aces and Eights, they had their cut. This was J.D. McDonagh's cut that they gave him. And Finn Balor showed up. He was like, what's going on here? And McDonagh was showing off his new vest. And Balor said, look, you better get out of here because we're going into the main event. You're barred from the building. Priest or Pierce is going to freak out. And then he looked over at Priest and he said, you and me, we got to go out there and show the world why we're the Undisputed Tag Team Champions. So I said, oh, okay, they're going to give this main event a lot of time because they said the main event is up next. And I should have known better. This is Raw. Nobody drags a show out and does absolutely nothing for 20 minutes better than WWE. It was 10:17 p.m. And I had read earlier on in the day that they were giving the main event a lot of time. So I said, wow, all right, 10:17 entrances. This match might get started before 10:30. I should have marked down the exact time it was when the bell rang and the main event started, but it was a while because we had another backstage segment. We had entrances. We had more commercials. Again, it's like I've never seen a company throw so much at the audience, and yet, really, they're not doing much of anything. They're just killing time to get to the eventual match. This is what I mean when I say Raw needs to go back to 2 hours. I don't want this constant padding on these shows. That's what this is. They're padding for time. They have this show structured and formatted in such a way like this because it is 3 hours. So they can do that. They can say, all right, we're going to have the main event coming up next. We'll send two people out to make their entrance. We'll go to a commercial. We'll come back. We'll go to an interview in the backstage area. Then we'll go back to the announcers to run down the matches on next week's show. Then we'll come back to the ring live. We'll have the next two entrances, ring the bell, and then 90 seconds later, we'll go to a commercial. Like, it's the same formula every single week. Like, you can set your watch to it. 2 hour Raws. You believe that we have had 11 years of 3 hour Raws? It was 2012 when this show permanently moved to 3 hours. I remember talking about it at the time, and I said, I said, this is the sort of thing that's going to end up happening here. Here we are. Elsewhere, Gunther met with Vinci and Kaiser. He said, good job tonight. And Ludwig Kaiser arrogantly started boasting about the win, and Gunther cut him off and said, I wasn't talking to you. He says that he was very happy with Vinci's effort, and Kaiser won thanks to Vinci. And Vinci was very happy to be back in the good graces of Gunther. Gunther shot Kaiser a look before walking off. So Kaiser was not happy about any of this. He needs to go have another Kaiser roll. He was not happy about any of this. Now, when he turned around, Jinder Mahal was standing there. Didn't I just mention them on the podcast yesterday in Duchere? Where have they been? I was talking about the tag team division, all these tag teams they have now. I said, and don't forget Jinder's crew. Haven't even seen them on TV in over a month. There they were. Jinder Mahal, Veer, and Sangha standing right there. Jinder said that they were here to meet with Pierce, but he told Kaiser, choose your next move wisely. Kaiser surveyed the situation. He saw it was 3-on-1. He thought better of it, and he walked away. So now it's Kaiser on the hot seat with Gunther, not Vinci. It was an interesting little twist on the story that they have been doing here with Imperium. Also in the back, I told you, we had a ways to go before we got to the main event that was up next. We go to Alpha Academy, and Otis was very upset about losing earlier. Chad Gable tried to reassure him and told him that, don't worry about it. He said that he would take care of Nakamura next week. All right, so there you go. There's the confirmation. I couldn't remember if they actually made the match for next week or not. He said that he would take out Nakamura. The Creed brothers were standing there with them. I don't know if they're officially part of the Alpha Academy or not, but the Creeds were with them, and they suggested that maybe you guys need some new training partners. And Gable told them, no, thank you. Because they were not going to abandon the Gable method. And Brutus said, come on, you know, we're undefeated on Raw so far, and maybe we could go after the tag team titles. As soon as they mentioned the tag team titles, who should show up? The New Day. Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, they come in, and they're all talking over each other. Meanwhile, Ivy Nile and Maxine Dupri start bonding, and they're very complimentary of each other, like best friends. Tozawa was there. He held up a Washington Commanders title belt replica. Said he wanted to be tag team champion, and he did his little dance. We needed this. Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso against Finn Balor and Damian Priest was our main event for the Undisputed Tag Team titles. Cody and Jey were in control after the first break, but Balor raked Cody's eyes as Priest distracted the referee and the Judgment Day took over. Jey Uso eventually made a tag. Balor made a blind tag, though, and he knocked Jey down with a clothesline outside the ring, and then Balor took Jey and he hurled him over the announce desk. And that took us into a second commercial break. Crowd was very quiet for the first half of this match. Cody made a hot tag after the break and hit Balor with a power slam and a disaster kick. And then he caught Priest with a bionic elbow. Balor blocked a Cody cutter. Cody set up for the crossroads, but Balor blocked that as well and then tagged in Damian Priest. Jey Uso tagged back in, and he hit Priest with a flying crossbody for two. Jey super kicked Priest and Balor and hit Priest with an Uso splash for a near fall. Uso then avoided a choke slam. He super kicked Priest. Rhodes dropped Damian with crossroads, but there was no pin because Priest was not the legal man. Jey speared Balor, who was the legal man, and then they hit their 1D Cody Cutter combo finish. Priest, though, broke up the pin at the last minute. Cody hit Priest with a suicide dive, but Priest shoved him into the ring post, and in doing so, a piece of the ring post cover, I guess, broke off and fell on the floor. Priest then chokeslammed Cody onto the ring apron. Jey Uso wiped out both members of the Judgment Day with a flip dive. He takes Balor, and he throws Balor back into the ring. And as Jey is sitting there, he looks up, and who does he see standing there? He came out of nowhere. Standing there is Drew McIntyre. Again, you had to see this coming. Jey Uso apparently did not. Jey Uso is someone that Drew McIntyre does not like. That's been well established on this show. As soon as Jey Uso gets to his feet, here comes Drew McIntyre with a Claymore kick. And then he takes Jey and he puts him back in the ring. Finn Balor covers Jey, gets the pinfall, and the Judgment Day retain their Undisputed Tag Team titles. So as McIntyre now is standing on stage, looking back at his handiwork, Rhea Ripley walks out on stage. And she stands next to Drew and puts her hand out, and the two of them shake hands, and they smile. And do you know why? Do you know why Rhea Ripley was out there shaking hands with Drew McIntyre and smiling? Because Rhea Ripley is the one who makes the deals. She's the one who made the deal with Paul Heyman in the Bloodline. She's the one who made the deal with Drew McIntyre all those weeks ago when we first saw the two of them talking in the back. She's the one who finally convinced him, obviously, to link up with the Judgment Day, because she is the leader of the Judgment Day. The leader is the one who makes all the moves. And that's Rhea Ripley, who had the parting shot when the show went off the air. Not Damian Priest, not Finn Balor. It was Rhea Ripley and Drew McIntyre. So next week now, we wait and see how they're going to do this, because the belief, and I said this last week, my belief was we'll end up with a 5-on-5 war games like we had for the men last year. I think both were 5-on-5 last year, but I don't think the women's is going to be 5-on-5. So Drew McIntyre is going to end up in war games. Drew McIntyre is not going to be part of the Judgment Day, because I know some people thought he was going to actually join the Judgment Day. We just got a brand new member of the Judgment Day on the show. They're not going to add another member next week, and Drew McIntyre doesn't need to be part of the Judgment Day. He could be friendly with them. He could be aligned with them occasionally. He could be an ally of theirs. He could be with them in war games. This does not mean that Drew McIntyre is now part of the Judgment Day, a member of the Judgment Day. But we're going to have him added to that war games match next week. And I think the closing shot next week, if tonight the closing shot was Drew, then next week the closing shot is Randy Orton either being announced or actually showing up and walking out. I don't think you need to do anything. Orton doesn't even need to talk. You could go off the air, play the music, he walks out, shoulder to shoulder, side by side with all the baby faces as they're looking at the Judgment Day, and the Judgment Day can't believe it. And that's how you go off the air on the Go Home Raw next week. But I do think it's imperative to do it that way. You don't want to leave an open spot going into a show in Chicago like this, because everybody is going to assume CM Punk. And they might even hijack the match or the show. You don't want that. Now, once Randy Orton comes out, they're going to forget about CM Punk. If they did save him as a surprise for the show, and then they played Randy Orton's music, he's been gone for 18 months. One of the biggest stars in the company. I would hardly call that a letdown if you're expecting CM Punk and then out walks Randy Orton. So I'm not so much worried about that, but I would think they want people to know in advance that Randy Orton is going to be making his return at Survivor Series. It gets more eyeballs on the show. So next week is shaping up to be a very big show as far as War Games is concerned, but the Drew McIntyre heel turn has been completed. This is the moment that they have been building to now for quite some time. And Michael Cole made it a point on commentary to point out why McIntyre did what he did. It wasn't like, why, Drew, why? Right? Like the old Jim Ross calls. He said that Drew McIntyre does not like Jey Uso. He doesn't like him. He doesn't trust him. So he screwed him over. And Cody Rhodes too, because Cody is the one who brought Jey over to Raw in the first place. So ergo, Drew has an issue with Cody as well as Jey. So it makes sense. That's how Michael Cole couched the whole thing. We saw a babyface segment in the back earlier with Drew and Seth Rollins. How is Seth Rollins going to respond to this? And if Drew ends up in War Games, that puts him and Seth on opposing sides in that match, which makes things interesting as far as extending that feud. Because you knew we were getting more than one match, right? You knew we were not just going to get one match, one and done between Rollins and McIntyre. This adds a whole new wrinkle into the equation now. So we'll see how the show goes off the air next week. But this was a show tonight that was completely carried by the War Games story, the Judgment Day, Cody and Jey, and that whole situation. That's what this show is all about. Everything else in the middle was complete filler. If you didn't see it, you didn't miss anything. Yeah, the Miz and Gunther segment I enjoyed. I'm not saying there weren't parts of the show that I didn't like, even though they were boring. But there were a lot of boring segments on the show, but there were also just a lot of segments that just felt like they were there for the sake of being there. And they don't necessarily play into anything of any great urgency as far as Survivor Series is concerned. I don't know if DIY is going to be on the card at Survivor Series, or Chelsea Green and Piper defending the tag titles. Are they doing that at Survivor Series? None of that's been announced. So for a show very hyper-focused on Survivor Series with the War Games stuff, all of this other stuff that's going on, we don't even know if half those people are going to be on the pay-per-view. So if you did not see this show, You didn't miss much. I would definitely tune in to the show closing match. The match itself was good. Not great. It was good. But the closing angle with Drew was the most noteworthy part of the show, the best part of the show. And I am very curious now where the Drew McIntyre heel turn goes, because they played it perfectly up to this point. Clearly, you could tell, like, he or they're drawing inspiration, I think, in some ways, from the Bret Hart heel turn in 97. So very, very interesting how things have played out with Drew McIntyre. For a guy who, all the talk a few months ago was, is he even going to sign a contract? Is he going to leave WWE? I never thought he would. We still don't know if he signed a new deal. Getting very close. His deal is set to be up in March. So if he hasn't by now, then we should be hearing some news on that very soon. Take a look at the Twitter poll. 72% thumbs up for tonight's show. 27.7% thumbs down. A positive thumbs up score for Mundane Night Raw tonight. Hey, JM has been a gold skull. Channel member for 25 months. He says hi. Everybody say hi to JM. Let's see what you guys have to say in Super Chat. I shall do my best to answer your questions. If you got any comments about tonight's show, go ahead and send them on in. Looks like it's a quiet night, so we'll try to get through these quickly, I guess, and then we'll get on out of here. Wild Bird has a $5 Super Chat. Says, I'm really liking the WWE women's division so far. It's not perfect every week, but I love the effort the WWE puts together. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not clicking in the way that they want it to, but these are the growing pains you have to go through to try to get some of these people over. You know, when you neglect them for so long. Unfortunately, now they're in a situation where they're trying to get over four or five different women at the same time. That's their fault. And maybe it's not entirely Triple H's fault, because some of that was out of his control, very likely. But unfortunately for him, now it's all kind of dumped in his lap, and he's got to try to get all of these women and all of these people over at the same time, instead of being able to just kind of do it one by one and let it breathe. And that's not the ideal situation to be in. He says, I'll say it, Gunther gives me 007 Bond villain vibes. If I was to make a James Bond movie, Gunther would be perfect to be the main villain. I could see that. Hulkling 93 with the 10 spot. Hey, Solo. Want to finish your Buffalo talk from Sunday? I said what I said about Buffalo. I got nothing else to say. Also, while I appreciate the effort with Zaya's kicks, the execution could be better, more emphatic. Candice and Indy were out cold. Maybe. I don't really have an issue with that, though. I think if they're just kind of selling, you know, that they're knock loopy and referee looks at them and says, all right, they're alert, but they're not all there, and so we're going to call it off. It makes it a little more realistic in a way, if you do it that way, instead of everybody just being knocked out cold. I don't have an issue with that. Samoan fan, what's going on with your ceiling? My ceiling has been filled in. Thank you for asking. My ceiling is now fixed. It was a mess, but we got everything cleaned up, and the ceiling... Now, we have not had a good soaking rain yet. It rained for like 8 straight weekends, or 10 straight weekends in New York. When I say rain, I mean fucking rain. And so naturally now, we haven't had rain, like real rain in like 2 weeks. So, fingers crossed, when we get that first big rainstorm, we'll find out if the leak issue has been fixed. Samoan fan says, who had the worst last match, Shawn Michaels or Ric Flair? Ric Flair. Shawn Michaels was the only saving grace about that match. He was working his ass off to try to save that match. Ric Flair was basically a walking corpse. I don't think you can compare the two. Wild Bird. Hey, Silver Tower. Thank you. Silver Tower has been banned from Collision by CM Punk. He's still very angry. Angry Phil, my God. Why so angry? Wild Bird. Thinking about the white powder spot. Holy shit. The white powder spot. Well, I'll tell you what, if the Coke spot didn't get them kicked off TV, then the white power spot certainly would. Let's try that again. Thinking about the white powder spot in the NWA. Next month is going to be the 40th anniversary of Scarface and the 10th anniversary of The Wolf of Wall Street. I did not know that. Scarface, a great movie, man. I haven't seen Scarface in a while. It's about time I go back and watch it. Also, in honor of the white powder spot in the NWA, buy or sell Scarface or The Wolf of Wall Street? Scarface. I saw both, but Scarface. Mikey Clayman. Drew sung a song after his loss. Why is he now mad? That's right. That's right. He sang a song with Tyson Fury. Sonic Youth, 615. Just got started and wasn't going to super chat because I just got laid off. But JD is in JD. Deserves a fiver. Love the wit. Well, I am very sorry to hear that you got laid off, Sonic, but I'd love to just say there's something better out there for you, and I believe there is. But I don't know what you do. I don't know what your situation is, so hopefully you get back on your feet real soon. I appreciate that, though, very much, that you would donate during such a time. I appreciate that. Pillow v. Pillow. I'm going to Dynamite on Wednesday, and I hope to see Jericho, Big Show, Edge, Christian, and Sting. What year is it? You know, I ask myself that same question sometimes. I'm not sure, but I don't think that this doesn't seem to jive with what the AEW mission statement was when this company first launched in 2019. Brumakian Productions. Cup of coffee in the big time. Ooh, yeah. Cup of coffee. I'll tell you what. You want to make comparisons between Randy Savage and Seth Rollins? Seth Rollins has never in his life cut a promo the way that Macho Man Randy Savage got a promo. We can end the argument right there, just at promos. I don't ever want to hear Seth Rollins compared to the Macho Man Randy Savage. Justin G, hope we land on Triple Threat in Be the Booker tonight. Well, we'll find out. All right, we hit the goal. We'll get to that in a bit. Will Chisholm with the 10th spot. It looks like at some point Bayley going to get kicked out of the faction. So I believe the end game is Io and Bayley at WrestleMania 40 for the title. That can be a thank you from Triple H to Bayley. I talked about that very thing on Friday night and again on Sunday. I think that is a very distinct possibility. But what I also said was, I find it hard to believe that Charlotte Flair and Bianca Belair will not in some way be involved in the title match at WrestleMania. Because every single WrestleMania that Charlotte has been in since 2016... and I think she's only missed one, which I think was 37, that first one kind of sort of coming out of COVID. She's been in a title match. Every single WrestleMania, she has been in a championship match. Bianca Belair doesn't have as many WrestleMania appearances. She's only had three, but all three have been title matches. And you mean to tell me that going into WrestleMania number 40 with two women's titles, Charlotte Flair and Bianca Belair are not going to be involved in a title match? I find that hard to believe. I think we may get a fatal four-way. I think it may be Charlotte, Bianca, Bayley, and Io at WrestleMania. Casey is Raw. What's going on? What's your opinion on Undertaker having a Patreon? Another little piece of my childhood has just died. The Undertaker is not supposed to have a Patreon. I mean, what do I think of The Undertaker having a Patreon? I'd rather The Undertaker have a Patreon than an OnlyFans. If I ever find out that The Undertaker has an OnlyFans, that's it. I'm done. Like, I'm done with the internet. That's it. I'm finished. I don't even want to know. Undertaker will be on OnlyFans. He doesn't know what to do with himself because he can't wrestle anymore. He wants to, but he can't. So it's just him around the house, like in the garage, working on shit. Just like posing and showing off. Undertaker doing feet pics on fucking OnlyFans. That would be quite the fall from grace. Silver Tower. If CM Punk doesn't show at Survivor Series, it means he's too busy wearing the devil mask in AEW. Exactly. Because it has to be one or the other, right? There you go. Casey is Raw. Who is more infamous for their announcements, Tony Khan or Dixie Carter? Oh, Tony Khan. Tony Khan has Dixie beat. Super Pony, who wins another WWE title again first, Kevin Owens or Finn Balor? Kevin Owens. The Yatagaratsu, who ultimately was the leader of the NWO? Between Hogan being the champion, Bischoff being the political leader, and Hall and Nash being the founders, it randomly had me wondering. Hogan. Everything revolved around Hogan. Bischoff wasn't the leader because Bischoff did whatever Hogan wanted him to do. Bischoff, I mean, he had his nose buried up Hogan's ass crack. Hall and Nash, right? They were the founding fathers of the NWO. But they were in the background to Hogan. Now, when there was a split and you had the Wolf Pack and everything, then you had different leaders. But no, I don't think there's any question that Hulk Hogan was the leader of the NWO. Chris Mikesell, rest in peace, Eddie Guerrero. Have you seen Eddie perform live? I have once, when he went up against Edge in a no DQ match in San Diego. Yeah, I saw Eddie. I don't remember offhand what the events would have been, but I went to so many Raws back then. Although most of them were during the Attitude Era, which was a little before Eddie came in, but I'm sure I saw, I'm positive I saw Eddie Guerrero live at least once. I remember the only SmackDown I ever went to back during that period was in, I want to say it was February of 2001. It was a show that had Austin and Benoit. It might have been Rock, Triple H, and Austin Benoit were like two matches on the show. So if Eddie was on that show, then I was at that show. That was at the Nassau Coliseum. And JanSport book bags. I still have a JanSport. If it's Rey and Santos at WrestleMania, what happens with Dominic at WrestleMania? I don't know. If they do Rey and Santos, well, I mean, who's to say Dominic and Santos don't team up? You know, against Rey and Bad Bunny. They could always do something like that. Will Chisholm, you're right, but I think Triple H may think Charlotte against Bianca is big without the title. So Io against Bayley might have a chance. If it was Vince, Io would have been... If it was Vince, Io wouldn't be the champion right now. Silver Tower, if Undertaker has an OnlyFans, he'll be making kinky Ministry of Darkness videos. Oh boy. What have I started here? Mikey claiming Drew will Claymore Priest right out of the Judgment. So Mikey thinks that Drew is going to replace Priest. It'll be Balor, McIntyre, McDonough, and Dominic. I don't see it. Not saying it can't happen, because Priest is going out soon, but I don't think that McIntyre is going to become a full-fledged member of the Judgment Day. I just don't think it's necessary. I just don't see it. All right, well, the goal tonight was 400 likes, and we are actually 470. We're getting close to 500. Can we hit 500 before we get out of here? I don't know. Let's see if you guys can make it happen. And as you mull over the idea of an Undertaker OnlyFans, and I apologize for planting the idea in your head here at 1 o'clock in the morning before you go to bed. Sweet dreams, by the way. Let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Be the booker. All right. We've had some very interesting installments of this recently. Interesting in a good way. So let's begin. You got me in the box here now. Let's start out with the men's Be the Booker, as we usually do things around here. Take this thing for a spin. Let it go, let it go, let it go. Jumble them all up. Remember they used to get the Royal Rumble picks out of the tumbler? Let them tumble all around. We land on Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid. This is, I could tell just looking at the gear, 1996. Just looking at this photo, I could tell. This is 1996 Shawn Michaels when he was the champion. Maybe right before. This could have been maybe early 96. Shawn Michaels in his prime. This is going to be good. Let's see. Shawn Michaels going to go one-on-one with Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. Oh, I would have loved for these two to wash away the stink of their SummerSlam match from 1993. See, that wasn't Shawn like in his prime, though. That was Shawn when he was on the ascent as a heel. And whatever it was, they had a very boring, very disappointing, underwhelming match at SummerSlam in 93. And so I would have loved to have seen that Mr. Perfect against Shawn from like 96 or 97. Unfortunately, we never got to see it. But now you did, here in Be the Booker. That right there is a 7-star match. But, knowing Meltzer, he'd probably give it 4.5 just to fuck with people. All right. It's going to be hard to top, but we'll try. Women's Be the Booker. Let it go, let it go. Tumble, tumble, tumble. I see some big names in there. I got a good feeling about this. We begin with the man, Becky Lynch. There she is, Becky Two Belts. I told you I had a good feeling about tonight. We got the big names here in Be the Booker so far. We got Shawn Michaels. We got Mr. Perfect. We got Becky Lynch. We got Gail Kim and Becky Lynch. How about that? Gail Kim, former Knockouts champion, WWE Women's champion. I guess. Would she have been women's champion or was the Divas title? I think she was women's champion, right? Yeah. Because Gail probably won the belt, my God, probably 2006 maybe in WWE. We are killing it in Be the Booker so far. These are great matches, man. This is fantastic. You saw some of the new faces, by the way, I put in there. All right, man, we gotta round out this card. This is where it gets tough. I feel like we're tempting fate. Well, let's see. Let's see. Not bad. Not bad. The Dirty Heels from Impact. I was a big fan of Bobby Roode and Austin Aries. They had a run together as the Dirty Heels. I was watching Impact during this time. I got back into TNA there for a while, and they were one of my favorite parts of the show. The Dirty Heels, Bobby Roode and Austin Aries, are going to be taking on the American Wolves, Eddie Edwards. Look at this. A.B. Richards and Eddie Edwards against the Dirty Heels. Guys, this right here will go down as one of the strongest Be the Booker cards that we have ever booked. Shawn Michaels against Kurt Hennig, Becky Lynch against Gail Kim, the Dirty Heels against the American Wolves. That's a fucking card. That is a card. I love it. That was a five-star addition to Be the Booker. Three for three. You gotta love it. Clean sweep. Let's hope that we can have some of that same magic on Wednesday. Assuming we hit the goal. We're going to be live. By we, I mean I. We'll be live after AEW Dynamite. It is the go-home Dynamite before Full Gear. So I will be live on Wednesday after Dynamite. I will be live on Friday after SmackDown. And I will be live on Saturday nights because AEW Full Gear is coming up. And if you missed it, I have Full Gear predictions on episode 834 of the podcast. I run down the entire card, and I have predictions for every single match, including the MJF match on the pre-show. Yes, the world champion is once again involved in a match on the pre-show. So go check that out. Episode 834 dropped yesterday. I covered a ton of shit. Only some of it right now is up on the YouTube channel. The full show, though, is up for you to go listen to right now. Arabian Knight, you get the last word here. Thank you for the super chat. Buy, sell, rent on these three WWE versus AEW matches. Cody Rhodes against Jay White, Hangman Page against Seth Rollins, and Gunther against Claudio. Ooh, I like that one. I like that one. You know what? You got me on that one. Gunther and Claudio. I got to buy on Gunther and Claudio. I'm going to rent on, yeah, the other two. I kind of think they cancel each other out almost. I mean, they're interchangeable. Both would be very good. But you know what? For me, I would go and rent on Hangman and Rollins, and then I would sell on Cody and Jay, but not really, because I think that would be an excellent match. Wednesday night, Dynamite, back here live. I expect to see all of you. Until then, take care, guys. We'll do it all over again on Wednesday.